An animated book opens and a city block rises from its blank pages. A low view moves down a main street, settling outside a movie theater. Illuminated by blinking lights, the marquee reads, Amazon Studios. More logos appear. Encrypted Productions, Ingenious, Memento Films, Automatic, Indicate, Totally Commercial, BP. Credits appear. Amazon Studios presents. In association with Encrypted Productions and Ingenious Media. In association with Memento Films International. An Automatic Indicate production. A Totally Commercial BP Productions production. Against a dark background, a short-haired woman in a tattered tunic stands chained to a wooden post. With her hands folded over her chest, she gazes up with a grim expression. She briefly shuts her eyes. Two men move a film camera closer to her. Bright studio lights shine on either side. The short-haired woman's reflection appears in the camera lens. As flames erupt around her, the actress shields her face. Looking terrified, she struggles in her chains and gazes up, wide-eyed. Over black, a title appears in blue, Seaberg. Daytime. In a bedroom, the actress fixes her blonde pixie-cut hair at a vanity mirror, then nods. Text appears, Paris, May, 1968. The short-haired woman glances off and rubs her lip, then regards her reflection. At a desk, a pajama-clad man with a graying beard smokes a cigar. Subtitles appear. Darling, I'll miss the plane. Now he joins her in the hall. You could come too. They've barricaded the Sorbonne. There are students in the streets. Why would I go to Los Angeles?
I'll be in Los Angeles.
He gives her a look. All right, stay. If I need to find out how you are, I'll just ask the prettiest students at the Sorbonne. Don't you trust me? Wait, maman. I have something for you. A boy shows a drawing to her.
Oh, that's just like him. You put the great in his beard and everything.
She hugs him.
We'll
visit maman on location this summer. The short-haired woman turns to her husband.
Au revoir.
She kisses him and her son.
I love you.
I love you, Mama.
Bon voyage.
Bye, baby.
A maid opens the door for her. The actress glances back at her family as she leaves the apartment. Now news footage plays on a TV.
The Black Panther Party for Self-Defense calls upon the American people in general and the black people in particular to take careful note. Racist police agencies throughout the country are intensifying the terror, brutality, murder, and repression of black people.
Black is beautiful! Freedom! Set our warrior free! Freedom in our world! Freedom in our world! Freedom in our world!
Racial tensions flared over the weekend in Oakland and Los Angeles, with more clashes between Negroes and police. In downtown Los Angeles yesterday, students and black power advocates joined forces to protest against police brutality.
In an ensuite bathroom, a strong-jawed man combs his hair.
But black power leader Eldridge Cleaver had this to say.
The police must be brought under control by any means necessary, including through force of arms. These racist Gestapo pigs have to stop brutalizing our community, or we're going to take up guns, we're going to drive them out.
He grabs a holster. Los Angeles. In the kitchen, a young brunette pours coffee. Wearing the holster, the strong-jawed man spots something in the trash can.
Oh, come on.
What?
Jesus, Lynette.
He pulls out a comic book.
I thought the move would be a good excuse to get rid of some junk.
You want to junk something, start with that rug in the living room.
My mother gave us that rug. I thought you liked that rug. It's just a comic, Jack.
It's a 1941 Jack Kirby origin issue, where Steve Rogers first experiments with the super soldier serum becomes Captain America. It's not just a comic.
Lynette steps closer to Jack.
Super soldier serum, huh?
Yeah, it was intended for the entire U.S. Army, but the experiment was sabotaged.
Sabotaged?
Nazis.
Those bastards.
They kiss passionately, and Lynette hikes up her dress. In an FBI building, Jack waits in the lobby. A woman takes a file from a cabinet and glances at him. Now a round-faced man leads Jack to a large, windowless basement office.
Your ASAC back home led me to believe you were some kind of sound wizard.
Yes, sir. They had me in technical there. But I was hoping to be out on the street. Investigation.
Working in suntan,
huh? Yes, sir.
Well, you're in luck, soldier. There are elements in our society who don't like the way we do things here in America. We know this because we are everywhere they are. In this city at the present time, that's this cocksucker right here. Hakeem Abdullah Jamal, formerly Alan Donaldson. Doper, pornographer, and for a short spell, resident of the Nut House over in Roxbury, Massachusetts.
They view photos.
He got clean, found Allah. It is now Mr. Jamal's fervent wish to unite radical Negro groups in their effort to overthrow our government. We aim to dissuade him.
Unbelievable. Who put this wire in you? Would you put it in the fucking bathtub?
A tall man glares at his co-worker.
You mind if I give it a shot?
Yeah, knock yourself out.
Jack picks up headphones.
Now you got a road nearby. Traffic.
The tall man glances at his co-worker.
Can you bring the middle up any?
The co-worker turns a dial.
Isolate the middle of top range frequencies. Turn down the bass. Yeah.
Jack turns a dial.
Okay. Patch it through.
Pan Am 23 out of New York. Round 5 on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Be good to have a good show.
Jack's our new sound man. Right on,
right on. You get assigned yet?
On a plane.
Can I get a coffee, please?
The short-haired actress sits with an older man.
Did you read it?
Mm-hmm. I did.
It's Fatty Jayewski.
She's got one number, Walt. She's this housewife living with these two lungs. Shirley MacLaine will probably get it anyway, so who cares?
It's a good part. It's a lot of money.
She gives Walt a look.
It's a musical. It's a Western musical. It's irrelevant. I want to make a difference.
What is it? It's a screen test. Logan's he's a good guy. He's a nice guy, Gene. He's not Preminger.
Hakeem Abdullah Jamal enters with a flight attendant.
Invisible white people at.
Sir.
There ain't nothing but seats up here.
Sir, people
are
sleeping.
How about right here? Well, what about these two right here? All these seats are empty.
Sir, if you'd let me explain, you must remain in the seats you were allocated.
I have the widow of the late brother Malcolm X shoved in an itty-bitty seat back there like a barnyard animal.
Sir.
She should be treated like royalty. Now, I told you I got the money to pay for some first-class white treatment. You gonna stand there and tell me my money's too black for you?
Sir, I'm not really interested in politics.
Well,
okay.
Let me tell you something, sister. Politics is interested in you.
It is a question of airline policy.
This is a question of that lady getting a seat that she deserves.
I'm gonna have to
which
ask you
I'm willing
to, take
to
your
pay
seat,
for.
Please.
And until she does, I'm gonna sit right here.
Sir, would you please take your seat?
It's took.
Jamal sits.
Excuse me. We would be more than happy to give up our seats. Wouldn't we, Walt?
No, that's not necessary.
Jean approaches Jamal and extends her hand.
My name's Jean.
I know who you are, Jean.
He stands and raises his fist in a salute. Jean looks intrigued. At an airport, Jack walks past a group of African-American men and women wearing leather jackets and sunglasses.
Watch out, homie.
He glances back at the group as he continues ahead. Carrying two cups, he joins the tall agent at a window. They watch passengers emerge from a plane on the tarmac.
That's him. That's Jamal. The broad is Betty Shabazz, brother Malcolm's old lady.
Jamal's in step with the Panthers, but he's an independent player. He's a big money raiser. Introduce him to Brando.
Gia and Walt step out.
Thank you for flying Pan Am.
Nearby, the group in leather jackets faces members of the press. Jean looks distractedly at the Black Panther members. Jean hands her purse to Walt and approaches them. She makes her way to the front and stands by Jamal, who faces the press with his fist raised. Jean raises her fist with the Black Panther members. She looks toward the terminal where Jack lowers a spyglass. He watches her intently. On the tarmac, Jamal glances at Jean as photographers take pictures. She lifts her chin proudly and briefly turns to Jamal. Jean raises her fist higher. In the terminal, Jack peers through the spyglass.
Who's that?
Jean Seberg. Some actress won a talent drive a few years back. She's a big deal in France.
Jean waves to the press and leaves with Walt.
What's with the salute?
Just grabbing some free publicity. Well, who knows? Maybe she's got a taste for dark meat on the bone, huh?
Jack watches Jean and Walt, then the Black Panther group. Now Jean and Walt walk through the terminal.
Black Panthers? That was dumb, Jean. The press isn't your pet, something to play with. You rub their noses in it, they're going to turn around, they're going to bite you.
Jean shakes her head. Nighttime. Lights illuminate a swimming pool outside a spacious house. Inside, Jean wears a short robe and walks by the wide floor-to-ceiling windows. As a small chihuahua approaches, she crouches and picks it up. Sitting on a bed, Jean makes a phone call.
Be not hurt no more.
She waits with the receiver to her ear.
Even though I love.
Out of vanity, she drops ice into a glass and pours liquor from a decanter. She stares off and takes a sip, viewing her reflection in the mirror as she steps away. She gazes out the window to a wide lawn outside.
For the blood of American ill.
Jean takes another sip. She crosses a rug and leaves the master bedroom.
When the blood
by the pool, Jean continues drinking. She lobs an ice cube into the water. She brings her feet together, then throws more ice. On a couch, Jean sips a drink. Wearing glasses, she reads a screenplay and pets the dog on her lap. She closes the script for Paint Your Wagon and finds Jamal's name and address written on the cover. She takes off her glasses and regards the address. She gazes off thoughtfully. On a residential street, a repair van sits under a street lamp. Inside, the tall agent and Jack use surveillance equipment.
Ali Akbar, Ali Akbar. What the hell's the matter with this guy? He can't afford a TV?
Take 40. I'll give you a heads up.
He glances at Jack.
Malcolm X rises out of his grave, comes over to shoot hoops, I'll let you know.
The tall man takes off his headphones.
1 hour, understand?
All right.
Jack takes the headphones as the tall man lies down nearby. Jack looks at his colleague.
Mary, ever want to know where you are? Working all night.
Bureau wife doesn't ask.
The tall man shuts his eyes. With a thoughtful look, Jack raises the headphones to his ear as he chews gum. Two black women step up to the van's windows, facing Jack. As they touch up their lipstick, our view moves outside the van. The dark, tinted windows show their reflections. In the surveillance van, Jack takes a photo of one of the women. He looks up from the camera as they fix their hair. The women walk away. He watches them go, then glances toward his sleeping colleague. He raises the headphones to his ear. Outside, Jean drives up in a sleek yellow convertible. She parks across the street from the surveillance van and glances toward a house. In the van, Jack leans forward as he notices her. He puts down the headphones, then picks up a camera with a long lens. He aims it toward Jean. In her car, Jean views her reflection in the rearview mirror. She fixes her hair, then grabs something from the passenger seat. Jack snaps photos of the actress as she emerges from her car in a short white dress and cardigan. She steps through a chain-link gate and approaches the house. Jack wears a curious expression. He takes more photos as Jean reaches the front door carrying a bottle. She knocks. The door opens.
Hi.
Jamal shuts it, then glances at three men kneeling on prayer mats. He lets Jean inside and she smiles at the other men.
Hello.
In the van, Jack takes photos of the other men as they exit Jamal's home. He photographs Jamal, who watches them from the porch. The trio glances at Jean's convertible as they leave. Inside, Jean stares at two black tropical fish in a tank. Jamal approaches, and she straightens up.
You must be some kind of crazy to come to this house in the middle of the night, in this neighborhood, in that car, with that face.
Jean smiles faintly.
Your friends didn't seem so happy to see me.
When they see white people, it's usually on TV or behind the billy club.
I was thinking about what you were saying earlier. On the plane.
Jean sits in an armchair and puts down a drink. Holding a mug, Jamal watches her light a cigarette.
But the problem with this country. And if I knew I was going to be drinking alone, I would have brought a smaller bottle.
She refills her glass.
So what would your husband think about you cruising through Compton in the wee hours of the night?
My husband is French. I'm sure it would amuse him a great deal.
In the surveillance van, Jack listens.
What if you're hanging out with a black revolutionary?
I want to be a part of that revolution. That's why I'm here. Look, it's all connected, isn't it? Vietnam, the oppression of black people in America. It's the same disease, the same illness, the same disgusting racism. How can I help? How does anyone change that?
One mind at a time. If you can change one mind, you can change the world. Education creates understanding. Understanding creates love. Love creates patience. And patience creates unity. But education costs money.
A smile grows on Jean's face.
Come down to the center. I'd love to show you how we're changing minds.
You saw me get on that plane. Come on, all that bullshit about white seats for white money. You were trying to get to me.
Jamal stares at her. Jean smiles and leans back.
Well, was it my money you were chasing, or?
Her smile fades.
Or was it me?
He holds her gaze. Jean finishes her drink and eyes him. Now Jamal drops Jean onto a bed as she unbuttons her dress. He pulls off his shirt and kisses her. Sitting up, he notices a burn scar under Jean's breast.
What happened?
A man lit a fire and put me on it.
She pulls him toward her and they kiss passionately. Jean climbs on top of Jamal. In the surveillance van, Jack listens. He raises his brow, then sets the headphones aside. Daytime. In an office, a tape recorder plays. A black and white photo shows Jean emerging from her convertible. Jack listens grimly. A nameplate on the round-faced man's desk reads, Frank Elroy. Elroy stops the recording. He views a photo.
You sure it's her?
I had DMV run the plates. They're registered to her address in Coldwater Canyon.
Well, it's not illegal to sleep around, even the way this girl does it.
She offered him money, sir. It's right there on the tape. She has a history of donations to civil rights groups. Joined the NAACP, age 14. She's a sympathizer, sir. They're involved together. I think she could be useful to us.
She's a prominent actress. There'd be a few in the Bureau that might be interested in her relations with Jamal. If she's given them money and a platform, that makes her dangerous.
The tall man eyes Elroy, who nods.
All right. What do you need?
Full authorization for bug and wire on Jean Seberg. I want everything on her.
In black and white footage, a younger Jean steps onto a stage.
Good morning.
What's your name?
My name is Jean Seberg.
Where were you born?
In Marshalltown, Iowa.
When?
November 13th, 1938.
That makes you what age?
17 and 11 months.
In the basement office, Jack watches the footage.
And do you want to be an actor?
Very badly.
The film stops and he rewinds it.
Is that Barrett? Very badly.
Now Jack and a colleague view film strips.
This one here, right here.
The colleague holds a magnifying glass.
You get that for me?
Jack holds up a strip showing Gene. Glimpses show a man using a soldering iron and another viewing documents at a typewriter. A board of mugshots shows black men and women. Jack pins a photo of Jean with her fist raised onto an evidence board. Now Jack and other men watch a film.
When Jean was 17, director Otto Preminger cast her to play Joan of Arc. The dream role quickly became a nightmare when flames got out of control during the climactic burning scene. For an awful moment, it seemed that she might really burn to death.
In the movie, flames erupt near Jean. Jack winces.
Firemen soon got the flames under control, but not before Jean had suffered some bad burns. She later said the emotional toll of working with Preminger had left her with scars on more than her body.
Now Jack hangs a headshot of Jean on a large evidence board. He regards many photos of black activists, then walks away. Daytime. An overhead view shows Jean swimming in her pool. She wears a red bikini. She surfaces near Jamal, who sits on the edge, wearing tiger-patterned trunks. Jean swims to him, and he takes her hands.
Can you go for a swim?
No.
She pulls him into the pool. Underwater, they move into an embrace. They rise above the surface and kiss. Jamal tosses her into the water. At a backyard barbecue, Jack, the tall man, and others stand by a grill.
Why even buy a nice piece of meat if you're going to cook it that long? The whole thing is like
you said you wanted it well done.
That's not well done. That's just burnt.
You have to set priorities. That's what I told her. Of course, Lynette here won't have time to be a nurse after her first.
No. The doctor.
Oh, trust me, honey. You won't have time to paint your toenails.
Lynette looks uneasy. A blonde teen looks at her.
You're really going to be a doctor?
Yeah, that's the plan.
That's so cool. Mom, isn't that cool?
Yes, dear, it's great.
Her mom smiles. Lynette looks over at her husband. Jack notices, then leaves the men at the grill and walks over to her. She gets up. She stands close to him.
Can we get out of here?
Definitely.
Jack! Gotta go.
No. Uh-uh. You're not leaving me. What's the big emergency?
Lynette looks upset as he leaves. Now Jean carries her dog as she leads Jamal to her bedroom.
You're gonna learn all these words?
Only if they want me.
It's not the question. The question is, do you want them?
Unfortunately, that's not how auditions work. You think I just show up in a pretty dress and they hand me the part?
Well, show me how it works.
He smacks her butt with a script.
No.
Jamal reads from the script.
You don't know me, Mr. Ramson?
Jean turns.
Who's that?
Smiling, he steps back and sits on the bed. Jean kisses the chihuahua and sets it down. She steps across the room.
You don't know me, Mr. Rumson. But there's not a woman on this earth who will make you a better wife.
You ought to.
Jamal approaches.
I paid enough for you.
He unties her robe and she mimes aiming a gun.
I may be paid for, but I'm not your property. You grab me unwanted like that again, and I'll shoot you down like a dog.
He backs away and glances at the script.
Where'd you get that?
A woman has her secrets.
Now put that down, or neither of us will have much of a wedding night.
Jean lowers her hand.
It takes two to make a marriage, Mr. Rumson. We made a vow to one another. You'll get everything you desire, as long as you promise me the same. All I ask for is four strong walls, a stove to keep out the cold, and a door that locks, so I can sleep sound at night. If you can provide it, I'll make you the happiest man alive.
Jean steps close to Jamal. He gazes at her, then glances at the script.
There's grit and steel in you, little lady. I appreciate honesty in a woman.
I'll wager that's not all you appreciate.
She opens her robe, revealing her breasts. Jamal pulls her down to the bed and they kiss. Jean shoves him off.
Be much better with a real gun.
She takes a revolver from a drawer in the nightstand.
Oh, what, you're gonna threaten to blow them away if they don't give you the part?
Why not? It could work.
She puts down the gun and picks up a dress. An exterior view closes in on Jamal as he leaves the house. Quick glimpses show him entering his car. Jean emerges in a white headscarf and coat. Jamal pulls away as a driver opens the back door of a car for her. She gets in and the view closes in on her. Later, Jack walks toward Jean's house. Wearing leather gloves, he picks a lock on the glass double doors. He steps in and closes the door. The agent glances around as he carries a case through the modern, airy house. He approaches the wide windows facing the pool and the hilly landscape beyond. Jean's dog approaches. Jack gives it a treat. Riding in the car, Jean glances out the window. As he walks through Jean's bedroom, Jack looks around. He passes an abstract painting over a fireplace, then looks toward the floor-to-ceiling windows facing the lawn. He approaches the vanity. He picks up an atomizer, then sprays perfume and sniffs it. At a lot, Jean meets Walt.
Can we hear you?
Waiting. They're all waiting.
Jean flashes her gun.
Jean.
She closes her coat over it and enters a soundstage. She strides to a group of men at a table and takes off her headscarf and coat. She wears a holster on her checkered dress.
Gentlemen, let's get this started.
She puts the gun on the table.
Good morning.
In Jean's home office, Jack opens the case which holds surveillance equipment. Now he unscrews the cap of a phone receiver. He opens a drawer and takes photos of donation receipts for the Malcolm X Foundation and the Black Panther Party. Jack spots a maid and hurries out of view. She walks toward the office.
Senora? Senora Sieber?
Entering the room, she finds it unoccupied. In a classroom, black children do activities at tables and on the floor. A slim black woman with an afro helps a child.
Put the ball in the pocket.
Good job, you got it.
The slim woman spots Jean building a block structure with a little girl. She goes to another table. Jean sits with a boy.
Oh my God, so quickly.
Jamal enters and approaches the slim woman.
How about you just try to sit
this
board this time for me?
Hey, beautiful. How you doing?
Hey, baby.
Jean watches them kiss. She lowers her gaze.
What are we doing today?
Jamal helps a boy, and his wife goes to another child. Jamal glances at Jean. On a playground.
Call a child a nigger enough times, he'll start to believe it. We're teaching this generation to grow up with a sense of self-worth.
And this is something we've had to do for ourselves. We have no grants, no government funding at all. You have a son, though, don't you?
I do.
You should invite him. Introduce him to the other kids.
I would, but he's in Paris with his father, who's wonderful with him, thankfully. You know, I work a lot, so it makes it easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess the movie business pays pretty well.
Yes, it does. But compared to what you're doing, I feel so frivolous.
You're wrong. The revolution needs movie stars. That's a responsibility right there.
Now, we have to wave a shotgun to get people's attention. You get your hair cut, and you're on the cover of Life magazine.
Well, I would love to help. Really, any way that I can, you just have to let me know. I mean, would $5,000 be enough? I have my checkbook.
$5,000?
Jamal's wife stares at Jean, who looks down and writes.
Do you have time to stop by the foundation?
Sure.
A distant view shows Jean and Jamal leaving the school. Jack photographs them from the back of a black Buick Skylark. Jamal opens the door to Jean's yellow convertible and she gets in. He glances around as Jack snaps another photo. With a stern expression, Jack briefly lowers the camera. In the basement office, he watches a film on a projector screen.
Qu'est-ce qu'elle a dit?
Il a dit, vous êtes vraiment une dégueulasse.
In the black and white movie, Jean turns to look at us.
Qu'est-ce que c'est, dégueulasse?
Using her thumb, she slowly traces a circle around her lips. She maintains a fixed gaze, then opens her mouth slightly. Jean turns away and the film ends. As the word fiend appears on the screen, Jack stares with a furrowed brow. Nighttime, at home, Lynette studies at a table. She glances up. Jack enters and looks toward the kitchen.
I missed dinner.
I would have made you something, but I didn't know when you'd be home.
Sorry.
He steps toward her.
They kept us late at the office. Again.
He touches her hair and leans behind her shoulder.
Oh, dear.
I have a hematology paper due tomorrow.
Jack softly kisses her cheek. She continues staring at her work. He lingers next to her, then straightens up and leaves. Lynette watches him go. Daytime. At Jean's, Walt enters a large room where a woman does Jean's makeup and a man interviews her.
Breathless made you a star of the new wave. Why do you think the French fell in love with you?
Did they? I think they fell in love with the character, Patricia. They want the girl in the Herald Tribune shirt. They get me instead.
And who is it?
Excuse me.
Who is Jean Seberg?
Jean glances at Walt.
Let's keep it about the movie, yeah?
So what's next with this new phase of your career?
Well, I am looking at a new script. It's a real firecracker. It's a love story between a black man and a white woman.
You think people are ready to see an interracial romance?
I think they have to be. This country is at war with itself. The point is, when people are in love, they're colorblind.
All right. You get everything you need?
Well, Miss Seberg, I'm sure our readers will join me in hoping that this latest chapter of your Cinderella story has a happy ending.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Walt leads him out.
You'll make sure I see that before we go, right? Thanks.
Jean changes clothes.
We have already discussed your next project.
Which one, the airport?
Mm-hmm.
You haven't told me what it's about.
An airport? Burt Lancaster just signed. You have a responsibility, Jean. A million Americans look at you and they see an escape. They want the girl from the Midwest. Rescued from the Marshalltown drugstore, given fame, money, glamour. What they don't want is this.
He holds a book.
This makes them feel bad. It threatens them. It's an insult, Jean.
The real insult is the lie we sell that everyone has a fair shake in America. That's the real threat.
Jean spots a man answering her phone.
Hello.
Hello.
Listen, I won't be a part of it. I've been trying to get away from that girl my whole life, running away from her. I don't even know who she is.
She is America's sweetheart. Look, I think it's great that you brought romaine out here. Really, that's all. Hey, quod me nutrit me destruit, that which nourishes me destroys me.
Don't you think it's a little early?
No, it's medicinal, it's for your nerves.
I meant for Latin.
Walt gives a drink to Jean, who crosses the lawn. She stands near lights as a photographer snaps pictures. She sips her drink, then gives it to the makeup assistant. Another woman adjusts Jean's short baby blue dress. Jean smiles coyly at the camera, then turns from side to side. Nighttime, Jamal addresses racially diverse guests at Jean's house.
The Malcolm X Foundation stands for Black education, Black empowerment. We have breakfast programs for Black children, study programs to feed their minds. We are giving them a chance.
That's hard work. And I get tired. Tired of watching brothers and sisters destroy themselves on heroin. Tired of hearing about Black churches being bombed and little Black girls killed.
Jean's husband looks on.
Tired of watching brother turn in hatred against brother under the pressure of a greater hatred, the hatred of white America for Black America.
He applauds.
I am tired of waiting for the day I'll see a Black man with enough opportunity to rise up and lead this nation and make that hatred a thing of the past.
With her gaze fixed on Jamal, Jean nods faintly.
All of you know what needs to be done. Dig deep. Put your money where your mouth been at.
Jamal locks eyes with Jean. She turns to her husband, Roman, and kisses him on the cheek. She watches Jamal and his wife kiss.
Hey, baby. Thank you.
Howdy.
A man hugs him.
Brother Hakeem.
A moving view closes in on a pair of metal comedy and tragedy masks mounted on stands. A close view behind the frowning tragedy mask shows a tiny microphone under the mouth hole. Outside, two cars drive up a curving hillside and pass the surveillance van.
Oh, what is this?
Bobby Seale just showed.
Your girl just transferred from the miners, amigo.
These guys are Panther royalty.
At the party, Jean finds Roman.
Baby.
Now they face Jamal and his wife.
I enjoyed your speech. Very much. I knew from Jean she'd met you, but I had no idea how involved she was. She tells me you're something of a unique figure in the activist movement. You believe in unity, not in separatism.
I encourage cooperation between those seeking to change the system, not destroy it.
But surely some things must be defended, fought for, even violently. Possessions, property, the things we love.
The men share a stern look. Jamal's wife eyes Jean.
Well, violence is never the answer, though. Right, boys?
In the van.
Isn't that a lot more friendly?
No. Don't say it to me.
No, we lost the feed.
We'll get it back. Buying milk for nigger kids in Compton's one thing. If she's funding Panthers.
All right, here we go.
Jack Jesus shoves Christ. A portable tape recorder in his pants.
Move! Right. Move!
At Jean's party, Black Panther members speak with Jamal and Jean. Coming from the yard, Jack takes a drink tray from a table. He wears the top of his shirt unbuttoned, without a necktie, similar to the servers at the gathering. He crosses the patio, then stops. From a short distance, he watches the group with Jamal and Jean. A bearded Black Panther member steps away from the group. He spots Jack, who turns away. Jamal and Jean walk off, and Jack follows. The pair strolls by the pool. Jack lingers nearby, sets down the tray, and crouches by the water.
You okay?
You go run into the Panthers with your arms open and your purse in your hands, the only thing they're going to see is your purse.
I thought you and Bobby were all about solidarity.
The Panthers can take care of themselves.
They're serving their community the same as you. And there's enough money to go around. There's enough of this good weed to go around. You might want to come down and take a toke.
What is it with you? You don't care what happens to you, do you? You run around here with a handful of nails looking for a cross to die on.
You don't get to tell me who I invite to my house. Nobody does. If bringing them here raises their profile and it draws attention to the cause, then I've done my job.
But what if it draws attention to you?
In what way?
You're playing with fire.
Jean looks taken aback. Jamal walks off, passing Jack as he goes. Watching him, Jack gets to his feet. Jean approaches him.
You know, a little reefer would take the edge off him.
She smokes a joint, then offers it to Jack.
Yes.
He accepts and takes a deep drag. Gene eyes him with a smirk. He hands the joint back and holds his breath. He holds back a cough. Gene pats his face and walks off. As he watches her, she glances back, then continues to the house. Now Jack goes down the steps toward the driveway. He leans against a wall, takes the recorder out of his pants, and wraps a cord around it. Daytime. In his office, Elroy views a tape player as Jack and the tall man sit in front of his desk.
Took Brando for 10 grand. We can take this chick for 20.
That's Bobby Seale.
Down from Oakland to chew hors d'oeuvres with Hakeem Jamal while they figure out how to spend her money.
It's time, sir. We leak the affair now, the Panthers will ditch Jamal. Finished.
The light girlfriend doesn't jive with the whole black power thing.
They won't fucking touch Jamal after this.
What about her?
Sir?
I spoke to Hoover. He's persuaded that Seberg represents a threat to the protective organs of the body politic.
What does that mean?
What it means, soldier, is that she may have been collateral, but now she's in the crosshairs.
She's not the target here.
She's got Bobby Seale smoking pot on her goddamn couch. You bet she is.
Her next picture's gonna be big. I don't want my girls reading in their magazines that it's hip to hang out with shine revolutionaries. Float the affair down the river, see what it hits.
In a bedroom.
Mom, I want to wear this. Mom!
Leaving her two young daughters, Jamal's wife enters the kitchen. She picks up the phone.
Hello.
She hangs up and wears a stunned look. Steeling herself, she strides off.
Girls!
In Jean's yard, Roman yanks a piñata's cord as a black girl wearing a blindfold swings a stick at it. Kids and adults look on.
Who's next? Okay, here, you can go.
Jean kisses her son.
Okay.
A boy hits the piñata.
Good! One more!
He hits it again and candy pours out. Kids run for the candy. At a table, Jamal's wife stands with her daughter, who ladles punch into a cup. The woman glances at Jean, who walks to the table with two children.
So I know his favorite color is orange. What about you? What color do you want? Which one?
Jean hands a snack to a girl.
Hello, sweetheart.
She turns to Jamal's wife.
I think being a mother is probably the hardest thing I've ever done. I keep waiting for it to get easier.
Wait till they get older and they get to asking more difficult questions like, why does a movie star want to buy their mama jewelry and write their daddy blank checks?
Jean looks uneasy. She hands a cup to a girl. The kids walk away, leaving the two women alone. Jamal's wife folds her arms and stares at Jean, who looks back with an uncomfortable expression. She glances off.
Dorothy, I'm sorry. I never meant to hurt anybody.
Oh, you are hurting them.
That's the last thing I wanted. You know how much I care.
And I'm supposed to be grateful?
No, that's not what I meant. I was just saying that I only want to support the work that you're doing. And I understand how important that is.
You think you understand? You think you can? You swing by in your limousine, open your legs and your checkbook, and you think that gives you the right to anything you want?
No. Absolutely not. I only ever wanted to help.
Well, that doesn't make you a better person. That makes you a tourist. This is my life.
Jean looks at her with tearful eyes.
This is the last time we see each other.
Dorothy regards Jean with a furrowed brow as she walks away.
Your kind of help I don't need.
Jean watches her go, then looks down grimly. She looks across the yard at Roman, who stands staring at her. At dusk, Jack and Lynette leave their car and cross a lawn to a house. Jack carries a bottle of wine. The tall man and his wife Mary step onto the porch to greet them.
Hey!
How are you?
Oh, for sure.
Sharp. Thanks. How are you?
Very well.
Nice to see you. Good to see you. Come on in.
Hi.
Inside.
Cheers to you.
Cheers.
Jack sips a drink.
I want to show you something.
The tall man hands a piece of paper to Jack. It reads, "Pork Chop Nigger." An illustration shows Gene depicted as a pig having sex with Jamal.
What do you think? Are you fucking kidding me?
I know, genius, right? Found some acid freak on Hollywood Boulevard. Draws those celebrity cartoons for the tourist. He really captured her.
Lynette enters.
Hey, guys. Dinner's ready.
Great. Come on, we're burning daylight.
All right.
See you right in there.
Jack looks stunned. In the dining room.
I went home, kicked open the door, turned on the lights and yelled, "Who wants to ball tonight?"
The blonde teen who sports a pixie cut sits at the table.
Jack tells me you have a son.
Mary's smile fades. She glances at her husband.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Teddy lives up in Frisco. Let his fucking hair grow out. In a commune with some friends up there.
You don't talk?
Oh, believe me, we talked. I thought I was gonna bust a knuckle, we talked so damn much. Some people just don't listen.
The blonde teen gets up.
Where are we going?
My room.
We're not done.
Yeah, we are.
You sit down right this minute and I'll pretend like I didn't hear that.
Oh, God. Carl.
Be quiet. You got a big mouth, you know it. Why don't you use it to talk some manners into that daughter of ours?
Are you gonna let him speak to you like that?
Sit down.
The teen stares at Carl.
I said sit down.
He knocks a cup.
You're right on the edge. Sit your ass down now. We're eating.
She complies. Mary puts a hand on her daughter's leg. The teen looks down and her father eyes her. Jack averts his gaze and Mary sips a glass of wine. Looking uncomfortable, Lynette regards Carl's daughter, who glares at him.
I like your hair.
She turns to Lynette.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's swell. Reminds me of someone. Who does she look like to you, Jack? Does she remind you of anyone?
Jack regards the teen's blonde pixie cut. Lynette looks between them. Daytime. On a fence outside the center, flyers show the cartoon of Jamal and Gene. Dorothy frantically rips down many of them. Stepping past the fence, she finds more flyers scattered across the playground. Some of the children hold copies.
Ellie, give me that.
Dorothy takes a flyer from a girl. At night, Jack and Carl sit in the surveillance van on the hillside near Jean's house.
Why would the Panthers do this?
You're giving them money, right?
You know I am.
You tell them about us.
No one.
At a desk, Jamal uses the phone.
Well, they found out.
Who found out? How could anyone just find out? And why would they care? I don't understand why Bobby Seale cares what you do.
Because I betrayed him. At least that's the way he'll see it. Me sleeping with a white woman.
Hakeem, I'm so sorry.
Whoever believes in Allah and the last day and does what's right should have nothing to fear or regret. Gene, it's over. I can't see you anymore.
What?
Check your phones. And don't go hiring any new help. Motherfucker called my house. My kids were in that house. They have a tape of us.
A tape? What tape?
Of us together in a sack.
Jack and Carl share a look.
Go home to Paris, Gene. You're not safe in America.
What?
They'll destroy you.
Who?
Jamal throws a lamp
Hakeem.
At the wall.
Hakeem, who is it?
A window breaks and Gene hides. Dorothy holds a gun outside.
Gene, come out here! I want you to tell everybody! Then why don't you come out here and wake them up, huh? Tell everybody! Let's tell your neighbors you fucking a black man, they know that?
Carl stops Jack from leaving the van.
Not about to fuck up the surveillance. She's gonna kill her.
My own kid?
She's just making some noise.
Cat got your tongue?
Gene stays behind a wall.
Yeah, I thought so. You stay away from my family.
Dorothy tosses copies of the flyer over the lawn, then goes. Gene peers out tearfully. In the surveillance van.
She was never going to do it.
Jack steps outside. Copies of the flyer lie in the road. In the house, Jean's lips tremble as she stands against the wall. Outside, Jack kicks a flyer. He walks back to the van and slams one of the back doors. In a dark room, a surveillance photo of Jean develops in a tray. In the image, she peers out a window. Jack takes the photo out of the liquid. He uses a clothespin to hang it on a line with other pictures. The agent stares at the image. At home, Lynette sleeps in the bedroom. Jack walks in and takes off his gun holster. He carefully places it on the dresser. His wife stirs. As he enters the bathroom, Lynette opens her eyes and looks toward the closing door. In the shower, Jack leans forward with his head under the water. He puts a hand to his forehead, then rubs his eyes. Daytime. An exterior view shows Jean's house and swimming pool. Standing at the vanity in her bedroom, Jean wears black undergarments. She pours a glass of liquor from a decanter. She takes a sip. Sitting on a couch, Roman watches her.
Diego and I will be returning to Paris tomorrow.
She eyes him in the mirror.
Thank God we were not home last night. This is getting out of control, Jean.
She turns to him.
You should go.
She leans against the vanity. Roman looks away. Jean shakes her head.
In New York, when they ask me where my husband is, I'll make sure and let them know that you felt safer in Paris.
He shifts uncomfortably and rubs his face.
You can't stand it, can you? You can't stand that I might be a part of something more important than books or articles or movies.
For God's sake, Jean. What are you a part of except the end of two marriages?
Tears well in her eyes.
They did this.
Her husband looks confused.
You don't get it. Somebody told her about us. Somebody... I'm saying things that they don't want to hear. Do you understand? Do you understand?
Roman regards her somberly.
I won't stop. I won't.
Jean shakes her head faintly as she stares at him. As she shuts her eyes, a tear rolls down her cheek. She puts a hand over her eyes and covers her mouth. Her husband leans forward. He looks down, then meets her gaze.
Can you just stay with me until after the premiere? Please. I can't do that alone.
They stare at each other.
Come to New York. Please.
He nods softly. Later, Jean picks up the phone next to the comedy and tragedy masks.
Diego
plays with a toy racetrack. Jean puts the receiver to her ear and presses the switch hook. Jean hangs up the phone and peers under a lamp. She touches it, then straightens up. Now Jean slides her hand behind a painting on the wall, then sticks her hand between the couch cushions. She runs to the phone and picks it up.
Hello? Hello?
Jean holds down the switch hook. Across the living room, Roman looks at her. She hangs up the phone, then shares a look with her son. She glances toward her husband, then stares at the phone. New York, October 1969. In a hotel bathroom, Jean takes a pill from a prescription bottle and swallows it with liquor. With circles under her eyes, she regards her reflection in the mirror. She covers her face with her hands, then briefly opens them. She repeats the gesture, then shakes her head and rubs her face. Lowering her hands, she wears a glum expression. Now she opens a window in her hotel suite. Jean holds onto the bottom of the raised window sash. She braces herself against the windowsill and sticks her head out. She gazes toward the street below, then leans further out. A dark-haired man leans out the window of a neighboring room. Holding a lit cigarette, he watches Jean as she stares downward. She turns her tear-streaked face toward him, and he looks away. He takes a drag of his cigarette, then stubs it out. Looking upset, Jean retreats into her room. The dark-haired man steps away from his window and crosses the room. Two agents use surveillance equipment while Jack reads a document.
She's cute. You saw her?
Oh, yeah. Now I get why Hoover wants mics in the bedroom.
There are no mics in the bedroom.
The dark-haired man stops smiling.
My ASEC was pretty specific. Hoover likes to hear the bed springs creak.
She's got her kid with her. You think she'll be entertaining radicals while she's got a kid with her?
Fine. It's your show. But if I was you, I would lure them out and put in a fuck wire. Like you're supposed to.
Jack flicks ash from a cigarette and raises his brow. In her hotel suite, Jean sits near bouquets and a pale pink gown.
I appreciate you coming.
Roman sits on the bed. I'll stay with you until after your premiere.
Promise me you'll never take my son from me.
Jamais.
Never.
Je te promets.
You have my word. Roman picks up a lighter and a pack of cigarettes. He gets up and walks past her.
We've tapped our phones in Los Angeles.
He turns back.
I'm serious. They're listening. I can hear these little clicks on the line.
He regards her impassively.
And they follow me. I've seen the same repair van out front of the house maybe 3-4 times. It's because I'm funding the Panthers. I think it's the government.
With tears in her eyes, Jean stares at him with a pleading expression. She opens her mouth to speak, then hesitates.
You don't believe me?
I haven't said a word.
She keeps her eyes on Roman as he steps closer. He touches her shoulder and gently strokes the back of her head. He kisses her forehead.
Try to get some rest.
He leaves the room. Jean wears a tortured expression. Daytime. Wearing a tiger print mini dress, Jean crouches to stick tape over the edges of doors in the hotel suite. Her chihuahua wanders nearby.
Jean.
She stands.
Je suis prête.
Let's go.
Okay.
She and Roman leave. Later, the dog stares toward the door. Jack and his dark-haired colleague enter. Jack feeds a treat to the dog. He carries his case into the bedroom. He sets it on the unmade bed and opens it. The dark-haired agent looks around the suite, then checks a closet. In the bedroom, Jack lifts the bed sheets and reaches under the mattress. The dark-haired agent walks to a clothing rack. He trails his fingers over the garments and examines one of the dresses. Now Jack reaches under the bed with a small device. He tenses. By the rack, the dark-haired agent looks at the dog. It jumps on his leg and he bumps it off. He glares toward the dog, then kicks it. In the bedroom, Jack's eyes dart. Jack leaves the bed and the dark-haired agent runs upstairs. Jean and Roman enter the suite.
You're going to make us late. You have the post in 20 minutes.
I'm sweating in this. I'm taking a shower.
She goes to the bedroom. You're keeping everybody waiting.
Would you find my gold necklace, please?
Jack hides in the shower. Jean enters the bathroom and undresses. She opens the shower curtain partway.
Jean, I want you to please stay in the room.
She hesitates, then grabs a bathrobe. In the hall, Roman looks down tensely.
Why?
Jean emerges.
I don't know what happened.
Her dog lies motionless.
Oh, Jean, please.
They came in here. I taped it.
She grabs tape.
They came in here. I taped it right before we left.
Jack listens from the shower.
That's what I've been saying.
No, stop.
They came in here and killed him. I told you.
Who killed him?
Now Jack storms into the agent's hotel room. Holding a takeout container, the dark-haired agent smirks.
What did you do?
Pretty close call, huh?
Jack smacks it away.
Fuck you! This isn't even my fucking case!
Jack tackles and chokes
him. Killed her dog? Why? Why did you do that? Huh? Why? Why? She'll know we went in.
She won't know shit!
She'll know we fucking went in, you stupid amateur fuck!
Jack releases him and stands.
Fuck you, Sony! Fuck you, Sony!
Dressed in the pale pink gown, Jean walks with Roman through a lavish hotel lobby. They wear grim expressions. A photographer approaches.
It's raining today.
He raises his camera and Jean smiles.
And I'm just about.
Her smile fades as she and her husband continue ahead. She takes his arm.
The train window girl.
In an elegant restaurant, Jack sits alone at a table. Holding a lit cigarette, he stares across the room. He watches as a maitre d' leads Jean, Roman, Walt, and his wife to a table. Jack lowers his gaze.
From my cigarette.
At her table, Jean accepts a menu. She wears a somber expression.
It's raining today.
Jack continues watching her from across the restaurant.
Raining today.
Jean glances over her shoulder. Walt leans toward Roman.
So, the film is a piece of shit.
Not the right time for a musical.
I liked it. Was I terrible?
You were glorious, a huge star.
Oh, listen, Jean. I've been meaning to ask. Walt told me about what you were doing for those poor colored children at the school, and I insist we make a contribution.
Jean stares at Walt's wife's purse on the table.
So, what are you doing next?
She glances at Roman. Walt eyes her.
Another Western.
Yeah.
They're filming in Mexico.
I'm just gonna use the ladies' room. I'll come with you.
No.
It's okay, thank you.
Jean walks away. Roman turns to Walt and his wife.
Excuse me.
He leaves the table. Walt shares a puzzled look with his wife. Nearby. Her purse. Move her purse. Her purse. You want me to move her purse? You want to cause a scandal?
Miss Super. Telephone.
Jean turns.
Please just do it.
She leaves Roman and follows the maitre d' away. Approaching the restaurant bar, she picks up a phone receiver resting on the counter.
Hello?
She listens intently.
Hello?
Receiver. I want you to stay calm. Listen very carefully to what I'm going to tell you.
Who is this?
In a phone booth, Jack lowers the receiver.
Hello?
He wears a conflicted expression.
Who are you?
I want you to...
Who is this?
I want you to stop. Donations, your association with the Panthers.
All of it. They will come after you.
They? Who's they? Who is they?
Listen to me. Listen to me. They will destroy you. Your reputation, your career, your family, everything.
Listen to me.
Jean hangs up. Other patrons glance at her as she stares at the phone. In the booth, Jack lowers the receiver, then hangs up. Frustrated, he yanks open the door and steps out. In the restaurant, Jean returns to her table. Romand, Walt, and his wife watch the actress as she lights a cigarette. Her fingers tremble as she takes a drag. Daytime. Jack arrives home. He turns to find Lynette standing nearby with a serious expression. Jack lowers his gaze. He enters the living room and sets down his keys. Lynette slowly steps forward, staring off. Jack finds surveillance photos of Jean spread across the table.
Lynette?
He turns.
This is work.
Work?
It's none of your business.
That's so completely messed up, Jack.
Her eyes well with tears.
Where have you been? I don't know where you are.
Because
I don't know where you go.
Federal government, Lynn.
Are you having an affair?
No.
Those are pictures from her house, Jack. Those are pictures from her bedroom. Don't I have a right to know about that?
No. You do not have a right to know. Because I don't have a right to tell you. So please, Lynette, do not fucking ask!
Jack knocks down a chair and glares at his shocked wife. A tear rolls down her cheek. He collects himself, then watches with a troubled expression as Lynette leaves the room. Mexico, January 1970. On a film set with a desert backdrop, an actor pins Jean to the ground. She wears a long wig. Jean glances off.
Wait.
Cut!
She looks toward the crew.
Who is that?
Who?
Him. He's been staring at me.
A boom operator near the director looks puzzled as Jean eyes him.
Well, I want him gone. He wasn't here yesterday. See? I didn't see him yesterday.
She removes her wig.
All right. Take a break. We'll pick it up after lunch.
Frowning, Jean fidgets. As the cast and crew disperse, she stays seated on the stage, resembling a desert landscape. The stage lights dim. Jean rubs her head as the remaining people leave the set. At night, a telephone sits on Jean's nightstand. Sitting in a chair, Jean watches the phone anxiously. She picks up the receiver and listens, then hangs up. She breathes heavily as she stares at the phone. Jean slaps the phone off the nightstand. She pulls on the cord and yanks it out of the wall. Outside the house, Jean drinks as she walks in her short, gauzy nightgown. She ambles down the patio steps. Jean takes another drink, then descends the pool steps into the water. She crosses her arms as she wades deeper. She lowers under the surface. Bubbles escape from Jean's nose. With her eyes closed, she leans forward and holds her hand over her chest. Sitting on his patio, Jack stares off as he holds a lit cigarette. Lynette looks out from the living room and spots him. She puts her hands on her hips, then heads to the open patio doors and joins him outside. Jack notices her and straightens up as she approaches.
I'm sorry.
Okay, but you gotta have more than that, Jack. What's going on with you?
Jack stands. He beckons Lynette to follow him.
Why do you think you're listening?
Why, it's what we do.
Jack steps away from the house, and Lynette hesitantly follows. They walk side by side.
There's things that I've been ordered to do. There's things that I've done that...
What kinds of things, Jack? Because I hear all kinds of stories. These two kids, these students, were shot in Campbell Hall, and people on campus are saying that the FBI provoked them.
I had nothing to do with that.
I moved out here for your career, Jack. I didn't move out here so that you could help manipulate black kids into shooting each other.
That's not what I'm assigned to do.
And what is it? Is it that woman?
Yeah. And they're pushing her too hard, and she's coming apart, and I feel like I'm just watching.
What do they care? She's just some actress.
It's not what she does, it's who she does it with.
He takes a drag on his cigarette.
And go to the papers. Do it anonymously.
This is the FBI. Nobody's anonymous.
Then quit. We'll go back home.
This isn't what you signed up for.
I can't just run.
Okay, fine, but you gotta ask to be reassigned, Jack. You can't be a part of this.
He regards her pensively. Daytime, Jean and Jamal stroll through the center's derelict playground.
I mean, I'm losing it. Wherever I go, it feels like they're listening.
I told you they wouldn't let up. You need to watch your back.
Look, I really need to talk.
Well, you're safe here. I had the phones taken out months ago, right before the water and the electricity.
I'm so sorry. And this is awful. I can't even look at it.
She avoids his gaze.
You never should have gotten involved with me.
You're not the enemy. There's a war against black people in America. You just got caught in a crossfire.
Well, now we're just gonna let them win?
Jamal shakes his head and steps away.
Come on, this isn't your fight, Jean. Look around.
She glances over her shoulder. She takes a drag on her cigarette, then steps toward him.
This little lady's about to blow up like a balloon.
Jamal stops and stares at her. Jean nods faintly.
You know whose it is?
Really sweet boy in Mexico.
On a rooftop, a man wearing headphones aims a mounted mic.
I'm my second monk.
Well, there are places there that can handle that.
In the surveillance van, Carl wears headphones.
I lost my husband. I've lost you. I want this baby. Imagine if it really was ours. Wouldn't that be something beautiful?
But it's not. Is it?
Her gaze lowered, Jean wears a somber expression. She kisses Jamal's hand. She takes a step back, then lets go of his hand and walks to her convertible. She sets her purse inside. As Jamal turns to go, she opens the driver's side door. In the surveillance van, Carl wears a thoughtful expression and removes his headphones. Puffing on a cigarette, he rewinds the tape. A glimpse shows code tape running through a teleprinter. The machine types out decoded text. Parts of the message read, "Bureau permission is requested to publicize the pregnancy of Jean Seberg, well-known movie actress, by black radical Hakeem Jamal, by advising Hollywood gossip columnists in the Los Angeles area of the situation, it is proposed that the following letter, fictitious person, be sent to local columnists. In the basement office, Carl types an informal letter regarding Jean. It reads, she confided the child belonged to a radical black activist, one Hakeem Jamal. Smoking a cigarette, he leans back and regards his work. Looking pensive, Carl rubs his lip, then glances off. He takes another drag, then grabs a pen and a folder with a note reading, attention, Special Agent Jack Solomon. He underlines, Saul. Smirking, Carl uses the typewriter to sign the letter, Love, Saul. In his office, Elroy reads the letter.
Love, Saul?
Private joke.
Jack barges in.
Okay, thank you, thank you. Are you kidding me?
I'm so sorry.
What the hell?
You're on live, soldier.
You heard the tape. The kid's not Jamal's. This will backfire on us. 6-7 months from now, the evidence is right there. The kid's not black, it's half Mexican.
6-7 months from now, nobody gives a shit. It's not her husband's. We're not in France. We don't go for that kind of thing.
This is ridiculous. She's not even worth it.
This comes from above. Our job is to cause her embarrassment and to cheapen her image in the eyes of the public. Your job is to get the fuck off my carpet before I bust you down a pay grade.
Jack starts to leave.
If we put this out there, they're going to go straight to Seaberg to confirm it.
No, they won't. It's the gossip columns. Something like this is too good to check.
Jack looks stunned. Outside a building, Jean gets out of a car and reporters swarm her. How has Monsieur Garry taken the news? Will he accept the child? Is it true the father is a black radical? She hurries inside. Paris, June 1970. She hides behind a wall.
Jean!
A man snaps a photo and Jean turns away. Roman grapples with the photographer and shoves him to the floor. Breathing heavily, Jean briefly shuts her eyes. In the apartment, Jean sits on a lavish fur-covered couch as she tearfully reads a newspaper. She covers her mouth with her hand. Roman watches her from the doorway.
Is it true?
No, those are lies.
Jean rubs her mouth as she shifts her gaze around the room. It's not Hakeem's baby. Looking distressed, she lowers her hand and fights back tears. I'm so sorry.
I came here to tell you.
And the father is who?
It's not who they say it is.
Then we'll sue them.
Jean wears an overwhelmed expression. Nighttime. At the end of the hallway, Jean tears flowers and drops them on a pile of debris in the living room. Diego steps into the hallway and watches his mother. Roman comes out of another room.
Diego, come on. Come on.
He escorts his son back to his room. Jean paces in her nightgown, frantically searching the living room. She pulls down a large framed picture and rips open the back. Now she unscrews a phone receiver and peers inside.
Jean.
She gives Roman a distraught look.
All right.
Spotting something, she walks off.
Please.
She reaches into a vase.
S'il te plaît. Please, please stop.
I've looked everywhere. It's not
enough.
I need to find it. There's a bug in here.
Stop it.
Enough.
She drops it. Roman rushes to her.
No. Get
me. Stop it. Listen to me, babe. Please.
He reaches for her, but she gets up and grabs another vase.
Jean. Think of the baby.
Crouching behind Jean, Roman wraps his arms around her. She gropes for shards of the vase.
Please.
He pulls her closer.
Please.
Jean turns and buries her face in his chest as they sit among the clothing and broken items. Daytime. At her kitchen table, Dorothy grimly reads a newspaper while her daughter eats. A headline in Joyce Haber's column reads, Miss A rates as expectant mother. Looking up, she glares at Jamal. He puts down their other daughter and glances uneasily toward the newspaper. In her Paris apartment, Jean faces the vanity mirror with her head bowed. She runs her trembling fingers over her cheek. Straightening up, She regards her weary reflection and covers her mouth. Makeup smudges her eyes. She lowers her hands and stares tearfully at the mirror. Nighttime. Looking down, Jean stands at her bathroom mirror. She puts a pill in her mouth. With a dejected expression, she sips from a glass of water. Drops fall from her chin. She lowers her gaze. She takes a handful of pills, then gulps water. Raising a prescription bottle, she pours more pills in her mouth. With an absent look, she brings the glass to her lips and drinks. Jean dumps more pills into her mouth and furrows her brow. She gulps down most of the water. She sets down the glass and bends forward. Lifting it again, Jean finishes the glass. Hunched over, she grips the sink. She slowly raises her head. Steadying herself, she sits on the edge of the bathtub. She rests her elbows on the sink and leans on her hands. She lays her head on her arms. The image slowly fades to black. Daytime. Lynette steps out from her house and crosses the lawn. Bending down, she picks up a newspaper and scans it. She starts back to the house, then pauses. She glances up, then quickly heads for the door. As she reaches the house, she hesitantly glances inside. In the kitchen, Jack smokes a cigarette. He eyes Lynette as she enters.
What is it? What's wrong?
She hands the newspaper to Jack. A headline reads, Jean Seberg attempts suicide. Lynette steps behind Jack and puts her hands on his shoulders as he unfolds the newspaper and reads. He puts a hand over his mouth. Lynette leans closer to him. In an elegant, mostly bare room, Roman stands by a window. Holding a lit cigarette, he studies something in his hand. Two chairs sit nearby, and flowers lie on a small round table across the room. Wearing black, Jean enters and glances at him, then goes to the table. She pours herself a glass of water and takes a sip. A view from behind Jean follows her through a hallway. She stops in front of a curtained doorway. Jean takes a deep breath, then pushes the curtains aside and enters a spacious, ornate room. Members of the press wait in rows of chairs. As photographers take pictures, Jean climbs steps to a platform. She sits at a table with several microphones.
Good morning.
Jean unfolds a piece of paper. She reads from it.
My daughter, Nina Hart-Garee, is dead. She was 2 days old.
Roman watches nearby.
I blame no one but myself for her death.
In the FBI basement office.
She deserved better than me.
Agents listen to a radio. Jack gazes down.
But she did not deserve the lies spread about her.
At the press conference.
In Nina's memory, I intend to sue Newsweek for the vicious, speculative, and libelous piece they have recently published. To defame somebody who speaks out against the perceived flaws of their government is a type of persecution.
She glances up from her statement. Photographers continue taking pictures.
But it was not the press who made me a target. I believe one powerful institution has been manipulated by another far greater power.
Jamal walks through the derelict playground.
Make no mistake, I am not the victim in this fight. I see that now.
Dorothy stands in the disused classroom.
We are all responsible.
In the office, Jack listens somberly.
We are all culpable. I don't pretend to have the answers. But if we refuse to accept the lies,
I believe one day, the truth will be revealed.
With tears in her eyes, Jean regards the reporters, then looks down. She lifts her gaze.
Thank you.
Jean folds the paper, then rises to her feet. In the mostly empty basement office, Jack wears headphones and uses a large tape deck. He starts and stops the machine. He listens to the recording. Jack stops the recording. He plays the tape.
How can I help? How does anyone change that?
One mind at a time. If you can change one mind, you can change the world.
Jack stares off. Now he enters a dark office and aims a flashlight as he crosses the room. He sets a bag atop a wooden filing cabinet. Jack unlocks the top drawer and opens it. He pulls out a folder labeled Seberg, Jean. He sticks the folder in the bag, then shuts the drawer. Paris, January 1971. Jean sits at an upscale bar.
Antoine. An old.
The bartender takes an empty martini glass. Chewing something, Jean glances down, then looks toward the other end of the bar. She spots Jack sitting alone. He turns to her. She regards him with a curious expression. He faces forward and averts his gaze. Jean leans forward. Do I know you? Jack shrugs and shakes his head.
I'm sorry, I thought we had met.
Well, we spoke.
Jean raises her brow and shakes her head.
In New York?
When?
On the phone at the restaurant. I tried to give you some advice.
Jean's expression tenses.
You need to leave.
I was there in your hotel room.
No, you need to leave now.
I don't know what happened to your dog. I know that you came back early to get that necklace.
She regards him uneasily.
Who are you?
It doesn't matter.
The bartender brings her drink. Holding the folder, Jack stands and approaches her. He sits beside Jean and sets the folder on the bar. Jean eyes it, then slides the folder closer. She opens it.
We logged thousands of hours of surveillance. photographs, transcripts, movements, conversations.
She looks through black and white surveillance photos of herself at her home in Los Angeles. Jack glances down at the pictures.
Oh, my gosh.
Jean reads a document.
Jean Seberg has been a financial supporter of the BPP and should be neutralized. Neutralized.
Jack looks away.
Usual precautions would be taken by the Los Angeles Division to preclude identification of the Bureau as the source of the letter if approval is granted. Precautions. So we're very cautious.
As Jean cries, she closes the folder and touches her mouth. Jack gazes off grimly.
My daughter. My daughter. She died.
Jean fights back tears. She puts her hand over her mouth and shuts her eyes. Jack wears a solemn expression. A tear falls down Jean's cheek.
I'm sorry.
You're sorry?
Well, if I could take things back or do things over, I hope I'd do it very differently. You deserve to know the truth.
That's not the truth. Those are lies. You know that.
Yeah.
Because you were there.
Yes, I was.
Every minute of it.
Yeah.
They stare at each other. Jean nods.
That's why I'm here now.
As Jean regards him, he nods softly.
Do you have a family?
My wife's expecting our first.
Congratulations. Go. Please.
He looks down. Jean looks toward the folder.
I'll take that with you.
He picks it up and starts to leave.
Hey.
He turns back.
What's your name?
It's Jack.
They share a long look, and she nods faintly. He nods back, then walks out of the bar. She watches him go. Jean gazes off. She takes a deep breath, then leans back with a pensive expression. Jean looks across the bar. She briefly lowers her eyes, then gazes off in thought.
When you're lost in worries, and it's Easter time too. And your gravity.
Words appear. In March 1971, activists broke into an FBI field office and finally exposed Hoover's illegal surveillance program, COINTELPRO. Congress condemned the covert program, which principally targeted civil rights and black nationalist movements. Jean puts a cigarette between her lips and lights it. Jean remained in Paris, where she continued to donate to the Black Panther Party and support political causes. She never worked in Hollywood again. On September 8, 1979, Jean was found dead in her car, having been missing for 10 days. Her death was ruled a probable suicide with unresolved questions. She was 40 years old. Jean looks across the bar.
I haven't got the strength to get up and take another shot.
She takes a deep breath.
And my best friend, the doctor, won't even say
cut to
what
black.
Is I've got.
Directed by Benedict Andrews. Written by Joe Shrapnel and Anna Waterhouse.
Melinda,
produced by Fred Berger, PGA. Kate Garwood, PGA. Produced by Brian Kavanaugh Jones, Stephen Hopkins. Produced by Marina Acton, Alan Richson.
And you're so kind,
produced by Bradley Pills.
Not to go to her too soon.
Executive producers Anna Waterhouse, Joe Shrapnel, Marsha L. Swinton, Dan Spilo, Philip W. Schultz. Executive producers Emily George, Naima Abed, Peter Tush, Stephen Spence. Co-producer David Diliberto. Director of Photography Rachel Morrison, ASC. Production designer Jameen Asa. Edited by Pamela Martin, ACE.
You can take one.
Costume designer Michael Wilkinson.
Though neither of them are to be what.
Music
they
by Jed Kurzel.
And if you're looking.
Casting by
city,
John Papsidera, CSA.
Better go back to from where you came.
Kristen Stewart.
Because the cops don't need.
Jack
you
O'Connell.
And men, they expect the same.
Margaret Qualley. Zazie Beetz.
All the authorities.
Yvonne Attal.
They just stand around and boast.
Stephen Root.
How they blackmail the sergeant at arms.
And Colm Meaney.
In his post.
With Vince
up my
Vaughn,
brother Carl, who just arrived
and
here from
Anthony
the
Mackie.
Coast, who looks so
Jade Pettyjohn,
first,
Grantham Coleman, James Jordan,
just like a ghost.
Amazon Studios presents. Where in association with Encrypted Productions and Ingenious Media. In association with Memento Films
well,
International.
I started out on Burgundy.
An Automatic Indicate
but soon
production.
Hit the harder stuff.
A totally commercial Bradley Pills production.
Said they'd stand behind me when the game
Seberg.
Rough. Ah, but the joke was on
credits
me.
Roll. Unit Production Manager Marsha L. Swinton. First Assistant Director Nick Mastandrea. Second Assistant Director Heather Wagner Wang. Cast in order of appearance. Kristen Stewart as Jean Seberg. Yvonne Attal as Romain Gary. Gabriel Sky as Diego Gary. Jack O'Connell as Jack Solomon. Margaret Qualley as Lynette Solomon. Colm Meaney as Frank Elroy. Vince Vaughn as Carl Kowalski. Stephen Root as Walt Breckman, Anthony Mackie as Hakeem Jamal, Victoria Barabas as Air Hostess, Sean Bolger as LAX Reporter 1, Ben Klewer as LAX Reporter 2, Brian Michael Jones as LAX Reporter 3, Celeste Pashu as Betsy Elroy, Laura Campbell as Mary Kowalski, Jade Pettyjohn as Jenny Kowalski, Misha Gons-Kirkel as L.A. Seberg Maid, Zazie Beetz as Dorothy Jamal, Robin Thomas as Interviewer, Kurt Collins as Phone Hippie, Grantham Coleman as Bobby Seal, Tobias Trevelyan as Dwayne, Noelle Danique Louis as Alice Jamal, James Jordan as Special Agent Maddow, Diane Chernansky as Lisa Breckman, John Frederick Scott as Maitre D', Edmund Weissen as Mexico First AD, Claude Knowlton as French Reporter, Eric Alperon as Antoine, Stunt Coordinator Rob Alonso, Stunts, Kelly Phelan, Mike Mukatis, Daniel Arias, Anthony Molinari, Travis Feenhage, Jim Palmer, Zach Duhame, Quinn Early, Kofi Yadam, Byron Ivy, Sadiqua Bynum, Cameron Early, Alex Marshall Brown, Casey Adams, Chris Palermo. Female stand-in, Grace Fay. Male stand-ins, Alexei Solodov. Evan Allen Gassess. Associate producer, Molly Stone. Script supervisor, Lynn Norton. First assistant editor, Stacy Pontius. Production supervisor, Christopher Miller. Production coordinator, S.J. Jojo Feger. Assistant production coordinator, Chris Ruiz. Production secretary, Samantha Wilkins. Production assistants, Lex Truss, David Mack, Kia Entwistle, Christina Gonzalez. Second assistant director, Spencer Taylor, Chalice Romero. DGA trainee, Angela Barrett II. Set production assistants, Ashlyn Pastorek, Christina S. Gonzalez. B camera operator, Steadicam, James Goldman. First assistant camera, A camera, Simon England. First assistant camera, B camera, Sarah Brandis. Second assistant camera, A camera, Natasha Moneypenny Mullen. Second assistant camera, B camera, Justin Zafiro. Loader, Richard Dabbs. Stills photographer, Logan White. Video assistant, Bryce Shields. Album available on music.film recordings. Songs, Call Me and I Will Be Happy, written by Paul Trefsker, performed by The Teardrops. Blood of an American, written and performed by Abu Talib, Bobby Wright. Green Haze, written and performed by Miles Davis. Tapestries, written by Fred Buck, William Donald, John Doherty, Michael Robb, and Joseph Scalfari, performed by Jelly Bean Bandits. Cowboy Movie, written and performed by David Crosby. Love of Life, written by John Douglas Horler, Chris Lawrence, and Norma Ann Taylor. Ankh, written and performed by Sun Ra, performed by Sun Ra and his orchestra. Naked Tongue, written by Werner Tautz. Beauty and the Beat, written by David Lindup. It's Raining Today, written and performed by Scott Walker. Happy Ever After, written by Andrea Litke and Irvin Litke. Just Like Tom Thumb's Blues, written by Bob Dylan, performed by Nina Simone. While this film is inspired by real people and events, certain characters' characterizations, incidents, actions, locations, and dialogue were fictionalized or invented for purposes of dramatization. Such fictionalization and invention is solely for dramatic purposes and not intended to reflect on any actual person, living or dead. Copyright 2019, Radical Chic, LLC. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from Amazon Studios, read by Sylvie Zamora. For more information about Motion Picture Access, visit our website at access.wgbh.org. Amazon Studios.